And we're live with our 316th episode of Absolute AppSec. I'm Ken Johnson at CK Tricky on social media, joined by my co-host Seth Law at Seth Law on social media. Seth, say hi.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to another episode. We are excited today to have Kurt and Cameron with us from Coffee, Chaos, and ProdSec. We're going to get into all sorts of questions with them on application security, their backgrounds, and everything else here shortly. Before we do, there are a couple of housekeeping items that I wanted to mention. First up is KernelCon, right? Ken and I will be teaching harnessing LLMs for application security at KernelCon. This is just a couple of weeks away at this point. There are still a couple of seats available for that course. This is a great opportunity to support KernelCon, but also to learn about LLMs, how we are utilizing LLMs in our daily lives and, you know, to perform application security tasks. So that's the first one. We will also be in Singapore for DEF CON Singapore trainings, teaching that course as well later in April. And then also we have heard that we will be at Black Hat USA and at DEF CON Las Vegas. So both of those opportunities are up and coming. Follow us in Slack or on social media if you are interested in any of those opportunities. These courses are changing significantly every iteration. It's been taking a lot of work for Ken and I to keep up to date with new things like OpenClaw, with skills. I mean, when we first started teaching this course, there wasn't even MCP servers for that matter, right? It was a lot of, hey, you have to build your own agentic tooling, and this is how you do it. But nowadays, there are pieces that make it a little bit easier. So I think that is everything from a housekeeping perspective. Ken, anything else you want to mention before we turn, where we drop over and start peppering Kurt and Cameron with questions?
Yeah, just I guess I kind of just give a little bit of an intro to Kurt and Cameron before we kick it off. So Cameron, so both Cameron and Kurt come from the Coffee, Chaos, and ProdSec podcast. If you haven't, I mean, probably have seen it, but if you haven't, that's the podcast. You should definitely go check it out. I was going to mention that both gentlemen are currently at Teradata. Cameron leads as a co-leader of the OWASP SPVS, the Secure Pipeline Verification Standard. And then I know that Cameron also hosts a cybersecurity lunch, and both gentlemen have been around. If you look at their backgrounds, they have been in the full-time trenches of AppSec and ProdSec. So can't wait to hear more about, you know, their perspectives and experiences. So gentlemen, welcome.
Hey, good to be here.
Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. And for those of you that that haven't heard, so Ken and I actually were on their podcast. This is a crossover episode, I should say. And the new version, that version of the podcast is being released tomorrow. So you're getting a healthy dose of all four of us this week if you are listening in line, right? That being said, you know, most people are, I think, pulling us up in different various avenues. So I had first things first, Kurt, Cameron, Ken and I are, you know, pretty familiar with, you know, the podcast world, like how, you know, people get involved with that. I wanted to start with origin story, but I wanted to start with your podcast origin story. Like, what is it that brought you guys together to actually start your own podcast? And, you know, what was it that you were hoping to accomplish, right? Like, I just wanted a little bit of background there to give, you know, our listeners as well, like, impetus to push over and listen to your podcast as well.
You want me to go first, or you want to go first?
The origin, I'll cover the origin, and then we'll turn it to Cameron. But I remember he and I were chatting in Signal one day, and we just were tossing ideas around. We're chatting about security and whatever is happening. It was like, you know what? One day we should start a podcast together. And it was kind of a joke. And then, I don't know, 3 months later or so, we said it again. We're like, are we serious about this? And Coffee, Chaos, and ProdSec was born. And that happened about 9 months ago. And we've been working on it ever since. And it's really to have some fun, get more involved with the community, share our perspectives, both in leadership and from our backgrounds and in the daily work we do. And it's really, I was talking to someone about this at a dinner last night to say, like, if I reach even one person and help them in some way, like, I have done something good for the world.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I think from my side, it was, I was looking to do more, right? I already do a lot, but I wanted to do more for the industry. I think me and Kurt both have strong opinions, and we like to say our strong opinions. And I think the podcast is the perfect opportunity to do that. I think there was, for me, there was another thing that I was a little frustrated with about, and not throwing shade, but there's a lot of podcasts out there that I feel are overproduced in the sense that, like, it's very scripted. It feels very forced. And I wanted to bring something to the table, kind of like what you guys do. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, there is a little bit of a topic or structure, but we get to just be freeform. Be the professionals that we are and have a conversation, because me as a person, that's the best way I learn is learning from others who are just talking through a problem, talking different perspectives and seeing where it pivots. And from my side, I was like, hey, like me and Kurt, we have, you know, similar opinions, but also conflicting ones. It would be fun. Let's do it. Mm-hmm. And so I spent a lot of time building it all out. And I think so far, you know, we're on episode 30 now and it's been a good time.
Yeah, congrats, right? Like getting over the first, whatever, 5-6 episodes and actually turning into more of a pattern seems to be where people will struggle, right? Like, you know, eventually it just becomes rote, right? Like it's part of your day-to-day or your week-to-week, and this is just what we do. And that it definitely felt like that, right? Like the production value that you guys are adding to it, and even like some of the pre and post-production that you're doing, like Ken and I are still learning things, right? We're like, there's definitely some areas where we could improve as well. But it does sound very familiar. Like, you know, Ken and I were always like bantering back and forth about like, two AppSec guys sitting on a couch just talking about what they're dealing with. And that's where Absolute AppSec came from. Initially, we talked about doing like whiskey as well, like AppSec and whiskey.
Nice.
But then decided, you know, lunchtime in the middle of the work week, right? Like probably isn't the best idea for, you know, whiskey, especially taking shots. Anyway. So
that's fair.
Yeah.
So my mouth just gets out of control with whiskey. The filter just comes off. It's not a good idea. It's better to be
filtered. Maybe one day. Special edition.
Yeah, yeah, we have some After Dark episodes. We got into trouble. Dark. Yeah.
Here's what we all really think. Yeah.
No. Yeah.
Unfiltered. That episode's going to be censored a lot.
We'll need to do that one live in the same room.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's probably a not recorded one is what that is. Yeah.
There you go.
I don't know. Yeah, we do get. Yeah. Anyway. But okay, so that's the podcast. Tell me a little bit about your backgrounds. We'll start with Cameron on this one, right? Like, you know, this is the question that we like to ask is how people got into security. Like, what led them there? What was the schooling like? What was the interest level like? Like, what brought you to security?
Definitely. Origin story. Love it.
Origin story, yes.
Yeah, I always tell anybody, because I mentor a lot of AppSec folks outside of my job. I try to help any... I'm mentoring a couple people right now. And I always tell them you got to have an origin story because every interview you're going to ask, that's going to get asked. My origin story, I have a couple, like there's two stories that I always tell people is a long time ago, I was playing World of Warcraft and me and all my buddies were playing World of Warcraft, obsessively playing, right? I was an obsessive gamer who stayed up, gets like 2 hours of sleep and game all day, every day. I was with these friends, there's triplets and their parents turned off the internet so it'd like turn off at night so that they couldn't play WoW anymore. And that's when we raided. And we were all like, what the heck? We need our other players. So we go over to their house and we're messing with the router and we find what they did, which is like they block some ports at some time at night. And we were like, hey, we can just port forward other ports. I think that's what we did. We did something to the router to get it over and boom, the control was still in place, right? But we had bypassed it and the parents didn't know. And so they eventually got caught nights later, right? Because they're yelling, because we're raiding and somebody started yelling and they're like, what's going on up there? And they found it. But it was one of the first times that I realized, hey, controls that are put in place can be bypassed and look visibly still effective. And so that stuck with me. And then the other story is I used to do a lot of LAN parties. I would have like 20 people come over to my house and we'd be in the front room, set all the rows of computers. And the one podcast, somebody came, jacked in, and boom, everybody got malware. And after that day, it was like, nobody is allowed to hook into the network until you have done an offline malware scan. And it was another like security moment for me that really showed me, hey, security is, again, something that's very important and effective, and it ruins fun when it's not used properly. Beyond that, you know, I went into college. I have an associate's in psychology, an undergrad degree in computer science, and a master's in cybersecurity. Have a whole bunch of certs, did a whole bunch of things like that, but I didn't know I wanted to get into AppSec or ProdSec, AppSec, DevSecOps. I didn't know I wanted to do that because it wasn't really talked about when I was in school. Everyone was just talking about hacking. It was always just hacking, maybe a little light SOC operations kind of stuff, but no one was talking about AppSec. And I just knew I wanted to do something with code, with security, and I didn't know what that was. And so I was like, I was just going to figure it out, but I'm going to study code and become an engineer, which I did become an engineer for 4 years. And then I was like, I'm going to pivot into cybersecurity and combine my passion of code and my passion of security into one. Lo and behold, I eventually found AppSec and was like, yes, this is it. This is me.
So yeah, I love the gamer history, right? Like that's a, you know, we could talk about what when somebody asked, were you Alliance or Horde, right? Like WoW Origins or, you know.
It's either or for me. So I depending used to actually, on the realm. Depending on the realm, I used to play actually Alliance because I PvP'd a lot. And if you were on Horde side, the queues were like 20 minutes or 30 minutes to get into a match. And if I was on Alliance, it was insta queue. So I was like, whatever, I'll just go pwn some noobs on Alliance. I don't care. And so I was a dwarf rogue, just backstabbing and wrecking people, stun locking them. So much fun. I loved when Shadow Step came out, was my favorite thing because could run and jump off a cliff. And people would be like, oh, he just, you know, he jumped off a cliff. And then you shadow step back to them. And they're like, what's hitting me from behind? Because they've already turned and left. Wreck them. So much fun.
There's so many security people that have gaming as origin stories. And I think part of it is this ability to find patterns and then the anti-pattern that helps to actually pwn noobs, right? Like, or how do you actually like play within the rules that are aligned and twist those slightly to your advantage, right? And that's very much like a red teamer type, you know, mindset, but also ProdSec as well. You got to recognize where those holes are and where that actually exists to plug those holes, to mitigate those issues. So cool. Yeah.
Still big gamer today too. So still next week I'm taking multiple days off to play because one of my favorite games is releasing some content. So still a big gamer.
Still doing LAN parties. Still
not anymore. No. I mean, with the Discord and all those things, everyone likes the comfort of their home and, you know, being around other sweaty nerds. I don't know.
doesn't hold quite the same mystique that it once did, for sure. So
yeah.
Sweet. Well, Kurt, let's turn over to you, right? Like I origin story. How did you get into security? You know, what was the impetus?
Yeah. So, I mean, I too kind of got my start in gaming, and me and all my buddies online, we usually like to crack things and take things for free, and software cracking was kind of where it started. We all had our experiences getting in malware and giving it to each other through downloads and IRC channels and the rest of it. But I went into college computer science. I was a programmer. I explored security, databases, software engineering in general. I really like security. I hacked Bluetooth devices. So I ran with a circle of people who did a bit of hacking and I thought it was fun. So when I came out of college, I took a job with a big DoD contractor and basically broke a military system to add more security to it and then pitched it to the people in the government. And I really enjoyed that, but I got away from the security minded stuff and went into like consumer electronics and eventually consulting and data and analytics, and I missed security. So I kind of fell back in by accident. I was having a conversation with a business information security officer who was like, hey, I'm building a team and I heard security is kind of your thing. So I was like, yeah, let's chat. I interviewed, I got the job and became a security architect, and it's kind of history from there. I'm still leading security architecture and doing a bit of everything, whether it's enterprise security, product security, or even on the go-to-market side. I have a consulting team today that does customer success style stuff with customers.
Cool.
You made me think of Joshua Wright. Did you ever look at any of his work and his tools and whatnot? I assume you had back in the day.
Probably back in the day. It's been a long time. The same hacks don't work anymore. I've tried to revisit it a couple of times.
That was a long time ago. This is probably no joke. 17 years ago, I'm thinking of when he was really in the thick of Bluetooth hacking.
That's when I was doing it.
Really? Yeah,
same time.
ShmooCon and all those conferences, you know, they would have a lot of like Bluetooth hard. I don't know if there were villages back then, but yeah, they would have like groups of people both talking about it, but also like trying to, you know, give tools and hardware to actually Pringles cans back then. You remember that, Seth? Pringles can, big thing.
Oh, yeah. Like
my extensions and yeah. Anyway, sorry. When you said that, I was like, oh my gosh, nostalgia. Long time.
I mean, I remember I'd sit in like big 100-person lectures at school, and you could figure out who had their Bluetooth on because you could just fire a payload and the phones would all light up and be like, what's happening? Like, they don't know who did it.
Dude, funny random story about kind of what you're talking about, but back in high school, me and my buddies found that on Windows computers, you used to like, if you're on a network, you could chat with each other, right? You could send I can't remember what messaging app, and it would just automatically pop up if you sent a message, and it would pop up on everybody's screen. A long time ago, me and my buddies figured that out, and we were like, let's be funny. And so we put all your bases belong to us. And so every teacher's laptop, every computer on the entire school popped that up, and it caused a major issue. And we had no idea. Oh man, we were so much in trouble, like suspended, all kinds of things. And it was like, we were just messing around, my bad.
That's the thing, is like, that's the mischievous element, the thread that binds us all, I think, is that slight mischievousness.
Yeah. Some of us got caught, some of us did not, right? Like, you know, when the... Not yet, yeah. Like when the Novell admins back in the day couldn't figure out like how to change default credentials, right? Like, what are you supposed to do with that power, right?
Abuse it, obviously.
Abuse it, obviously, as a student, as a 14, 15-year-old sitting in a computer lab where they're trying to get you to, like, print hello world, right? Like, what are you going to do, right? Like, you did that in 20 seconds, and now you're off and running, yeah.
That's the only thing that saved me from, like, getting, kicked out of school from that incident, was because I helped them build like their programming courses, and we were doing IT stuff and all kinds of different stuff for them. Like during lunch, we were the big nerds just hanging out doing those fun things. But yeah, like that's the only thing that saved us, was that we were part of that group, and otherwise I'd have got kicked out of high school. It's like crazy. Being curious.
Being curious, yes. Learning to cover your tracks, as they say. Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Research, really.
Research, yes.
Preparation. Well, it's education. It's just a different type.
Yeah. Different type. Okay. So with that, thank you both for the origin stories. Always a great, you know, always great to hear where people are coming from. There was a few questions, like we talked about how like this idea that, you know, AppSec is dead on the other podcast, and I'll let people listen to that right over there. So we're not going to rehash those talking points, but there were a couple of questions that popped out of that discussion that we did not get to. And you know, granted, I'm jumping in and, you know, kind of taking over because selfishly there was this one question that was on the list that you guys brought up that I would like to address. I'm just going to post it into the comments here, right? I mean, maybe we can even start with Ken on this one and then, you know, round robin the discussion on it. But the question was, if a developer approves an AI proposed fix in 30 seconds instead of 30 minutes, is that a security win or a rubber stamp problem waiting to explode? And before I have Ken answer this question, this is a historic problem that we've had with GitHub, like pull requests and code reviews as it is. The more content that we push into a code review, the more likely it is that a developer just rubber stamps it, right? And just looks at it and says, well, I only have 20 more minutes for this. This is 10,000 lines of code. Looks good. Let's just push it, right? Like it met the unit test, whatever it is. So let's push it. Does AI change this, right? So I'll ask Ken first, because he is dealing with pull requests, and then we're going to round robin. I'm interested, Kurt, especially like what you're dealing with from a security architecture perspective and how you're like approaching this problem. So Ken, I'll let you respond first, though.
Yeah, I mean, developers are doing this. So whether or not it's secure, they are doing this. And I guess it would come down to if it's a small change and they were able to quickly peruse through, say, six files, like meaning they can see the six files that are changed, and they were able to see mostly that you just responded to all the bot comments. Perhaps they're like, meaning bots that are doing code reviews, like different types of bots. Perhaps there's some safety there. I don't know, but my default without all of those caveats would be, yeah, it's hot garbage and we're in for a fire. But yeah, that's my answer.
So one thing I wanted to say about this is like the level set. I think this problem precedes even AI, mm-hmm. right? That's the big thing. We've always dealt with PR review issues in general. As a former dev, it was probably the least exciting part of my day. Right, was going through those because I think, well, at least from a dev's perspective, at least how I felt was coding is creativity. It's building something that's coming out of your mind, and you're building something that is tangible and interesting and that somebody may want. Before AI, like PRs were just like, hey, I got to do this, right? Got to get it done. The quality and time, maybe, I don't know. I don't remember being tracked by it, but it's definitely something there. And then now if you think of AI, we've taken away from, at least from my perspective, I was just listening to a different podcast, but we're heading towards a world where devs don't write code. We architect and review code. With AI on top of that, you're heading towards a review fatigue. I personally think that's what's going to happen, because the most fun part of being a dev, whenever I saw a dev's, like, you know, when I was developing anybody, that's when the lights in your eyes kind of explode, right? You're like, yes, I'm going to build something cool, right? This feature looks cool, or I'm going to do that. That's where it's the real fun is. And yes, AI kind of explodes that, but now you got to really critique those PRs. And then when you start looking at that, you're eventually going to be just review so many PRs. How many PRs are you going to be going through? And then you're going to be like, hey, whatever, it passed all the tests. It passed all this. So I'm just going to, you know, push it along. The thing that I'm really concerned about is that a lot of the tests are being written by AI. So you have AI writing mm-hmm. the code, you have AI being writing the tests. And then now you have a dev who's kind of maybe in a way checked out because it's not the fun part. They're looking, they're just looking to deliver their feature. And I don't know if that's going to cause an engagement issue with the code and the features and the quality that's going to come out of it. So I definitely think it's a big problem. How to solve that, I don't know, because that's what the industry is doing. Like, the thought that we may go back to writing code is never going to happen. Like, even if you think about code today, let's think about AI today. And if it never changes, like from here, we're stuck at this point. Everyone's still going to use, like, 99% of your code is still going to be AI. Like, everybody is. We still have a ton of folks who aren't even using AI yet. They're eventually going to get that on board, and they're going to get it, and companies are going to get to a point to where they can just keep using it. So I don't know. It's a complex problem.
It is. And I like what you said, that this isn't a new problem that we're having, right? From a creativity perspective, it was always just code maintenance type thing, right? Like, oh, we want to make sure that no one is pushing from a security perspective, no one's pushing a backdoor. They're not releasing our secrets into, you know, the code stream or into public, whatever it is, right? Like, you had your checklist of things that you would actually review. I mean, I know that, you know, Ken did this quite a bit at GitHub when he was there. We do it for clients at times. But it feels like a very monotonous task, right? So I understand the predilection of a developer to just click and approve. So Kurt, on your side, from a security architecture perspective, how are you approaching this? Like, how are you preventing it? Or, you know, how are you making sure that this is not causing additional issues?
I think we never want to rubber stamp anything. Let's start there. I think we humans fall into that pattern because they have too much to do. So if it's a code fix and they need to get this to production because, hey, it fixed it, it passed the test, great, stamp, move on. AI is just accelerating that behavior, right? And so now instead of it taking 30 minutes, if you can have AI do one every 30 seconds, now you're getting 60 times the throughput. And people are going to like that. That's why people want to use AI to speed up, but you're just making the problem worse. You're building a mountain of technical debt or problems, so to speak. And so as architects, like, we do a lot of reviews and we don't always spend all of our time in code. It could be doing an architecture review or a vendor review or any flavor of security review to say, hey, are we facing risk? If anyone rubber stamps it, like, it was either the cleanest pile of documentation you've ever seen, or the AI gave you some false sense of confidence and hallucinated it. Like, that should not happen in 2 minutes, unless you know everything there is to know about the system. So I think, yes, we use AI to run security reviews, but we also still double check it. Even in threat modeling, it's, yes, AI can accelerate things. If you can run a threat model in 3 minutes as opposed to 3 hours, that's a win, but you have to double check it or else you're going to run into a problem, because AI is built by humans. It inherited all of the problems we've created because of the way these things are trained. And so mm-hmm. you have to invest in checking the work. And that's really how we're augmenting ourselves with it on the architecture side is, yes, use it, speed yourself up, but do your due diligence, because if there's a risk buried in there, it can come back to bite you pretty badly.
I think there are times when it's possible to do it. And then I think of like orgs, like the one I think we talked about this on the last, on your podcast, which was the customer who hits like now more, but about 55,000 PRs a month. And I'm like, I know there's nobody who can get through that many reviews given their company size and do a thorough job. So then it kind of becomes a question of like, you know, are there certain PRs that have to raise to a certain level of risk, or you know, there's got to be a percentage that you can't do all of them, right? So there has to be some like, oh, we specifically wanted the security team to review this change kind of thing, I would imagine. Otherwise it wouldn't at scale, I would think, not work very well. But again, that's for orgs that are doing that volume. Not every org is doing that volume. Yeah, Ray, it's actually probably more now than 55,000. It went from 20 to 55,000 over the last 3 months because of AI assisted coding.
One thing I see, at least on LinkedIn a lot, is people are saying they're stop reviewing PRs and they're starting to only review outcomes. Like outcome-driven approaches, because AI is shifting so much code and delivering so much, and we're heading towards agentic workflows. Total side tangent, but have you guys heard of vibe coding is now being called agentic engineering?
I love that, because I do hate that term vibe coding. It's almost disrespectful to it, because there is like, you can manage this as a, although I say that, and like Gene Kim put out this book called
Literally. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I was just like, what a great way to cover, you know, to change something and make it very like corporate, you know, jargon, kind of like perfect speak. But as we head towards, you know, our agentic workflows and in possibility of us just laying in bed in Telegram saying, hey, build this, commit that, and we're not even reviewing it and measuring more outcome oriented, maybe that's why there's so many commits, is because they're not really worried about the PRs at the PR level. They're worried about the outcome. What does it deliver? Does it meet does it pass QA things, you know, and whatever testing that meets way down right, rather than focusing and meeting the PRs, because that is a bottleneck, right? Do our current SDLC processes and the way we handle and measure code and scan code from a security perspective, not enabling the devs from that perspective?
I mean, we apply that same principle like everywhere, is outcome driven. We focus on the outcomes. And so why should you review 55,000 things if all you care about is the final outcome? So if the AI pushed a fix and it actually fixed the problem and it was a security fix, I mean, that's a win, whether it's 30 seconds or 30 minutes, or if it took 2,000 commits and it still achieved it, great. So I think it's, Cameron hit the nail on the head with that one. It's, don't focus on creating a ton of different problems. Focus on actually, did we fix the problem?
Well, yeah. I'm not saying I agree with that, all right? I'm just saying that's what I'm hearing because I bet they have loads of owns, right? Because how can you, on scale, like, manage all those? Are they pen testing, continuously pen testing at the end? We've all seen AI drop in hard-coded creds, you know, broken access
SQL injection,
all kinds of SQL injection, like basic stuff that you shouldn't be there, and it's totally there, right? Like, so what I really want to do is dive in with these companies that I see or teams that are saying they're measuring the outcomes, not the PRs. And I'm like, how are you managing the security side? Like, what guardrails, what mechanisms are making them deliver the kind of production level code we expect today, where they're shifting so far down right? Right? Because the whole world, for years, we've been developing code and we've shifted left for reasons. And now they're saying, hey, we're just going to shift right and it's going to be fine. Are these like, I don't know, Seth.
Well, this was one of the.
I'll just interject there and say it is kind of like, if there's automated tooling at the front end, I guess it's both shift left and right. It's a circle. It's just, I don't know what I'm saying, but there are
everywhere.
Ideally, in the beginning, but yeah, you're right. Like, it ends up moving ultimately to the end.
There was an article that I dropped into Slack recently. I'm trying to find it again here, right? Like, this discussion that we had on, we've had quite a bit. So it goes along with AppSec being dead, right? Like, the article was that software development, like the SDLC itself, is dead, right?
I'm hearing agentic. Agentic software or agentic lifecycle development, or every time you throw an
agentic development lifecycle.
Oh yeah, just my dyslexia destroys my brain.
ADLC.
Yeah, ADLC.
And this is what they're falling back to. Like, I have severe like anxiety issues when I look at that, and it's all this just like, oh, it's all outcome driven, and I get that, and there's guardrails in place, but 55,000 commits, you know what I mean? Like, how do you expect to cover that all without, again, other tooling that's in place and at least some deterministic checks to make sure that you aren't introducing, you know, the SQL injections and other things of the world, right? Like, if I'm trying to protect that code base, that's keeping me up at night, because all we're doing is introducing different bugs. I mean, we've all used AI to build things, right? At this point, am I wrong? We all used it, right? We know how well that goes. It's perfect. Not a perfect.
Every time.
It's perfect. Okay, yeah. Cameron's designing prompts way better than I am. Then, yeah.
Chef's kiss.
Yeah, exactly.
90% of the time, it works every time.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Every prompt is a book.
Yeah.
So I've got really like serious heartburn, and that doesn't mean that, you know, we're not going to get to the point that AI is going to be able to do this, right? Like, this is the worst it's ever going to be. That's been the common refrain that we've been saying. It's going to get better over time, but we have this corpus of experience on development and how to build a stable system and how to make sure that software is secure and stable that doesn't always incorporate into those AI systems. And so I like, there's got to be some middle ground there is all that I'm saying.
Yeah, I agree. I think like, we're throwing around this massive number, right? 55,000. It's like, are we going to operate on the assumption that we kind of always have, like, you got to check all of those things? Like, the second that it gets committed, it's not going to flow straight into production, right? And so you're going to have some sort of gate, and you don't, like, at what point do you do the check? How do you scale this so that it's feasible?
Well, One thing that I want to jump into this graph, but one thing that I heard, I was at a CISO dinner, and it was like everyone was complaining about AI, and they were like, how do we secure AI? And a couple of the CISOs said the craziest thing I've ever heard, which is that their engineering teams are no longer committing based off like features or bug fix. They're committing off time. So they commit every 15 minutes. And whatever their project status is at, that's when they commit. And I was just like, my mind was blown at that moment, because it was like, that means you could have like a half-baked commit. And then if you try to security scan that, you're going to like it might be massive, right? You could be talking 10,000, you know, 30, I don't know, massive amount of lines. Your whatever scanner you have is going to have to chug through that. There's going to be findings. How do you feedback that loop back to, if we're just trying to apply modern day practices? But it still sticks with me, is like, are we heading to a world where PRs will decrease because we're committing, we don't care anymore. Like the testing and all those cycles happens locally. And by the time it gets to the PR perspective, it's already met a threshold that's happened beforehand. I don't know.
Well, if you do need some level of attestation, even if it's automated. So that's the only thing, like, I will say, because I've heard this before, where it's like, well, we'll use stuff locally to make sure that agents are reviewing the code locally before it's ever shipped to the PR level. The only issue is that, you know, nobody has any guarantees there. At least if you have attestation, you have like some level of somebody saying, hey, this was reviewed. Plus also you can see if, you know, there was action taken, what action was taken. Yeah, all the different. So I don't think it's like going to move out of the PR level, but I will say this, like, one thing that we do for our customers, is not about my product, it's just saying this is something we do to manage this, is to send out not just the vulnerability, not just the PRs that have vulnerabilities, but the PRs that signify risk, because you modify multi-factor authentication, you introduce new authorization to whatever, right? New API endpoints that had no protection that were important on some admin interface. I don't know, whatever it might be. And then you have the option of using automation to then investigate what actually happened in those pull requests. And that's because of what actually you guys said, which is that it's kind of sometimes a thing of people shifting more right, where they're like, look, I'm going to go back and at some cadence and look at this window, whether it's 24 hours before or 7 days before or whatever it might be, and see like what cumulatively across the board has shipped. Because, you know, we all know that like things happen across multi repos in some instances. And so then they say, okay, cool, I have a picture of what all was like changed and which things seemed the riskiest. Now I can go in and dig in. Is that the right way to do it? Guess it remains to be seen. It's nice to have at least awareness about it. But yeah, I guess
that's
a question mark.
Yeah. And that's kind of what this graph is that I've pulled up here, right? Like, this is the idea now that we have the agents doing reviews, we're basing it upon what the spec was, right? And if it's all clear, then we go ahead and ship it. But if it meets one of those other, markers, Ken, for lack of a better term there, mm-hmm. right? Like anything, but indicators
signal?
That
they always say signal now, yeah. right? They're like the
yeah.
signal.
Right. Yeah.
The signal that you touch something dangerous, then it goes to human review, or at least like, yeah. So, I mean, it's agile at some level, right? We're using agents to do agile development, and now we're committing on time. Cameron, I had not heard that. That is wild to me.
Isn't it wild? It is, like, yeah. I heard that months ago, and it's just been banging around in my head. And what it's made me rethink, because I lead the SPVS project, right? And mm-hmm. the Secure Pipeline Verification Standard fundamentally is built around our current SDLC process. But with AI and our current development practices, I'm sitting here just racking my head. I'm like, am I building something that's fundamentally going to be gone in a month or in 6 months or in a year? Like, are we about to go through a huge shift? Because if you also that just been just banging around my head is that I believe it's OpenAI has openly said they're rethinking like our current GitHub, you know, Git practice, right? If you look at Git and how we commit code and do all that, they're rethinking the SDLC, our source code management systems, and everybody's talking about this. And I've even heard conversations from like GitLab and GitHub, and like they're rethinking how can we rebuild that process, because all these current things are built for humans. And no longer is that the mentality in the world we're heading into. So it makes you question everything we're doing. And I know from the security side, you know, we're 2 years behind. We're just starting to question, how do we catch up? I don't know. I'm like, what happens? What's going to happen? How is this all fundamentally going to shift how we deliver software with that? And all the points that we usually hook into. What if the SDLC becomes, you know, AGA, or I can't say the term.
ADLC.
Thank you. Gosh, wow. It just breaks my brain. What happens if that completely changes how we do deliver software? And our normal hook-ins are gone.
Yeah, that's a good point, because security, like we're always behind. Security's always playing catch up, right? With the latest that developers are using. There's a reason that we're always like, yeah, the best AppSec people are typically the security or software engineers that have come to the security side because they understand how current software is being built, right? But even when we talk about software security, we talk about the secure SDLC, right? Like it's all built around this idea that there are certain gates that everyone's using to build that software. And if they stop using those gates, what do we do? How do we actually prevent that risk from occurring, right? Like from a security architecture perspective, we have to have something to look at to secure it. And if we don't, how do you even tell an agent to secure something?
I mean, you have to, and I've been thinking about this since even Ken was talking of like, what are all of the things that we care about when we're running these checks, whether they're in code or in designs or whatever it is, right? Is we're likely going to move to a world where you have to outline, what are the things that scare you? What are those things that are going to keep you up at night, Seth? And you're going to teach an agent how to look for these things, and it's going to flag every instance where it thinks one of those problems exists. Now, if it does that 50,000 times, well, I think you need to retrain your agent. You have to find the balance, like with everything in security, to say we're doing it good enough. Perfection is the enemy of progress. I mean, I know it's a bit cliche, but it's true. I think the gate is still going to exist. It's just going to be slightly different. We're going to move faster. Yeah. And as Cameron was talking too, and we're saying that these processes were built for humans. And I think when you hear OpenAI say, we're going to kind of reinvent that, it's to say, well, we don't want to just use AI to do what humans would do deterministically faster. Maybe it's time we finally blow it all up and do it better with machines at that speed.
Well, yeah, and it does. Their proposal would be, though, is that just like everybody just commits to master or main or whatever? Is that the goal? Or, you know,
I mean, everybody is anyway, right?
Like, that's what do you mean? Like, I already do that. I push to prod. I commit to prod. I don't know what you guys do.
Yeah.
Friday afternoon. Main.
That's just a hop, skip, and a step away, right? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that is my question. Like, what, you know, if there's no need for differential checks, if that's what we're saying, then what does that move to? You know, it can't, I mean, it would be difficult if it's directly to like a main branch or something along those lines. I will be curious, like now you guys got me hooked. Seth and I got to follow this now and see how this progresses. I mean, I literally have to follow it for work. So this is interesting.
Well, one thing I wanted to say is that, like this is something I'm doing with AI is a lot of mental exercises, and the mental exercise I have is are my immediate reactions grounded in a world where security was, and it's not where security is? And that's the kind of the big question ProdSec really needs to have, right? I posted many times and said this many times that AppSec and ProdSec is in for a reckoning because we fundamentally haven't changed and we need to massively change now. And the resistance I have when I hear something like this is that bound in a place of, well, this is how we've done it, and we did it for these reasons. And are those reasons fundamentally not important anymore, right? Because the outcome is more secure or just as secure as before. And like, that's what I try to keep thinking about is like, is this new process going to produce the same quality, right? We're all committing code that has vulnerabilities. And anybody who says that they're not doing that, I think you're crazy. You just haven't found them yet. Yeah, go get some more tools, go hire a couple pen testers. You're going to find bones. It's just the nature and complexity of long-term systems. Are we going to be delivering similar quality code someday with AI that it no longer needs these so far left checks and that the ADLC makes sense because we're just producing the same or better code now, more secure, right? And so from then our side, it comes into the question of what is AppSec, what is ProdSec, DevSecOps, security architect, what is our job when that world comes? Because I do feel like the industry is heading in somewhere in that direction.
Well, and Cameron, to that point, right, like we've had these shifts in AppSec and ProdSec previously, like CI/CD pipelines, DevOps, DevSecOps, as it came about, right? Like the tooling that existed when Ken and I started in the consulting space was very much based on the waterfall method, right? Like,
SVN.
Hey, there's, yeah, exactly. Yeah. SVN, there's a gate, and you know, we can have 3 days to scan this code, right? Like after they get done with the release, and then they go back and, you know, fix whatever we find. And then with Agile and with DevOps, that became so obsolete, and very quickly we had to adjust what those tools looked like. And now, right, like from a discoverability perspective, you know, code versus like SAST versus DAST versus SCA, like we're just merging these tools together. And do they make sense, right? Does it make sense for us to build code in the same way that we always did as an engineer? No, it doesn't. But that means that those tools are going to be obsolete. I'm with you there, right? Because I'm seeing it, you know, across the industry and the consulting or the orgs that I work with, like we have those that are very progressive and they're trying to do AI first and they're figuring out how to use tooling. And then I have traditional organizations that haven't even, you know, opened up ChatGPT yet, right? And so it's this weird fight that I'm having waking up in the middle of the night being, what do we do as a consulting org to meet these needs, to be forward thinking, to actually figure out what we need when you're servicing clients across the board? And Ken, I'm not sure what you're seeing from people that are coming to talk to you on that.
Sorry, I was just thinking back to, sorry, about this whole shift left versus right and everything. And so like, okay.
His brain is exploded. Yeah. You can see it over there. He's just like, it's leaking out.
tiny bit. So here's the world that you've now made me picture, a world where bots and things are used to, in real time,
bots make sure and things. The hand waving is doing a lot there. Hand waving.
The automation piece, the non-human piece, right? That all gets done, code gets to whatever state it does. There becomes a point at which there's a periodic point then, I guess, where security then almost has to go back. And I've seen this in some products, I won't name them, that have purported to, this is the direction they're going, where, you know, they'll have like agents for different functions, not just SAST, not just DAST, not just threat modeling, not just red team, but everything, right? And the idea being, I guess, and I'm thinking through, why are they going that direction? And I'm starting to realize, like, I think maybe as you talk about shift right, at some cadence, you stop and you say, okay, here are all the changes that have happened. Here's the elevated risk that we should be looking for now, because we already had a baseline and we now know what's changed. And then maybe I enact the relevant agents that do these different things, these different tasks, to then go and be my, almost like a private bug bounty team. That's like your agentic private bug bounty team. They go and do their little thing. And then you walk away with whatever needs to be burned down. And then that feeds directly back into the dev cycle. And this continues. I don't know. This is just a hypothetical, I mean, just off of what you said, because it sounds very interesting, actually.
I was just reading an article from Cursor. They published a security agent article where they list like their top four security agents and how they essentially achieve their agentic workflow for like almost near zero human review. And they listed like three different agents that all have three different core tasks that review the code in some kind of cyclical nature. And it was fascinating. And I was like, all right, so like, is that the world we're headed, where security is building these custom agents that meet in there? I don't know. But then it goes back to like the whole tokens, right? Are we all going to like, in my contract, am I going to have enough tokens?
Yeah. Right. We talked about that. Yeah. Like yeah, tokens being distributed, tokens. Like security's budget of tokens and individuals' budget of tokens and groups. Yeah. It's interesting. Engineers. Man.
I think we're starting to see that model unfold already, though, too, is where you have multiple agents with different jobs and one kind of hands off to the other or informs the other. And so now you've got this whole security cycle that's just happening in. Insert human wherever you like to make sure that they're staying on the rails and not blowing everything up. Well, but it's really interesting to see this unfolding kind of as we speak right now, because I've talked to vendors in the last 2 weeks that are all working on this.
The one thing I want to bring up, as you say that we're heading in that direction, right? The immediate reaction that I hear from every security professional is deterministic versus non-deterministic approach, right? And they just get stuck in this deterministic versus non-deterministic. And the question I always say is, what happens if the end result is more secure or just as secure? Does it matter? I don't know how you guys are feeling about that, but like, look, from the compliance side, right? I deal with heavy compliance. I meet with very smart compliance folks, and they are just like security resistant to AI. They're like, it's not deterministic. And I'm like, but why does it what if it finds more vulns? What if it finds more accurate, more real, ones that you couldn't find with a deterministic tool? Why are you so resistant? And they're like, well, I have compliance things and I need to show a baseline consistency. And then I'm like, all right, so are we being held back by compliance? Is that what's going to hold up security for the next 5 years? Because compliance is going to hold us
The lag, like you talk about the lag of security, the lag of compliance is even worse.
I know, because I was thinking like, man, they're going to have a hard time, because like even just starting something, because we're talking about blowing away even the PR flow altogether. There's probably for them, it would be a huge leap to say, oh, well, entities are considered okay to approve. So an entity could be a human or entity could be AI. And that would be like forward thinking for compliance, you know? So yeah, you're right. They're going to be way behind on what's realistic here. That's a good call out.
Even with compliance, like we spend so much time with auditors and evidence gathering, like this is all being automated. Like AI is being applied to it too. And we're moving to a world where continuous compliance has to happen. You can't scale that with humans. And so you have to have the audit trail. You have to be able to prove things at any given moment, but machines can do that and they can just as easily break it, or a bad actor can come in and blow up that whole process. But if you want to do this stuff continuously, the frameworks have to evolve with it to make it achievable. And then the technology has to enforce it.
Finally, a use for blockchain.
Could be.
Sorry, I mean, I didn't throw that in there, but it's tongue in cheek, but it makes sense, right? Like when we start sucking signatures, we start talking observability, right? Like all that kind of thing. But
I was just, because like this is a conversation that I was having around was it CSA, the Cyber Resilience Act, that's coming out in 2027. Like that one it's got some strict terms in it and some really heavy stuff around, artifact generation, artifact compliance, some stuff pulled from Salsa. And I'm like, how are we going to meet those requirements using our possible new future of an agentic workflow, agentic SDLC, right? Like, it's fascinating on kind of what's going to happen. And I feel for the people, right? Because there's the people side to all of this, is that anybody who's like, I've got my career and I'm set. I'm like, you're going to have to sit down and spend all that time you spent when you were in the early years learning. You got to redo that right now. And you got to be into it hard, because you're going to get left behind. And that's the last thing I want anybody to have happen.
Yeah. It's funny. You go talk real quick about that deterministic output bit, because first of all, that is, and if you're buying an AI vendor of any kind, that is what you're paying for. You're for outputs that are virtually deterministic in output. But to get there, and Seth can tell you, when we gave, because we've been given our AI course, like how to build AI for security, for a while now. And I'm only saying that because we did it in the very beginning when everything was awful and it was horrible. And so the problem that I'm about to explain was exacerbated back then worse than it is now, but it's still not great today. And we'll get into these courses and we'll teach people and we'll preface it from the very beginning. We'll tell them, hey, listen, okay, this is a 2 or this is a 4 day course, right? This is not enough time that we're going to be able to solve all of your problems. We're going to get through the major concepts, but understand that you're going to be fighting this non-determinism always. It's the most difficult thing that you will deal with. And people get like, kind of, they're kind of shocked. They're like, well, wait, like I thought I was just, it's like, no, we're here to teach you how to use all these tools. We're here to get you towards like how to do evaluations, how to do like the management of all the things that help you get to those deterministic outputs. And there's a lot, but we can't do it for you. And you're going to spend all of your time doing that. And that I'm saying this for a very specific reason, because Larry, I'm sure you saw Cameron had mentioned something about not turning AI loose on a system configuration. And back to your point, the inverse is true too. Like sometimes determinism is the right out. Like if the outcome is the same for you with determinism as AI agentic stuff, but it costs less, it's repeatable, and you don't really have either very complex problems or a huge budget, or you're like Larry and it's just for configurations and you want to make sure, like that's a pretty easy, simple thing to look at is with determinism as configurations. Like it can go the opposite way. So you kind of need to know like what are your constraints and what are you okay with and what's acceptable? Cause like, I don't know. I just think that's a really good point, Cameron. Like it's not always, yeah, you have to go AI or you have to go deterministic. It might be even a blend of those things. It's not always right. Yeah.
Well, if it's a blend of those two things, the big conversation, at least from like, I feel from a compliance perspective, is how do you have the money for that, right? Because like let's zoom in on a specific tool, SAST versus AI SAST. I don't know about you guys, but I think majority of people have budget for one tool, let alone the personnel to manage and handle one tool's integration and day-to-day operations. And so it usually is a binary decision. But that problem that I have there with that is that because it's a binary solution or a decision, you're missing a whole set of things. And so I feel like this is the thing I'm constantly trying to educate my leadership on, is that we have to have right now, we're in a world where it's a blend of two. Maybe someday it'll settle into one thing or into a blend of both automatically happening in whatever tool you buy. But right now you have to kind of purchase two different tools to get that coverage that you never have, or you build it yourself.
How's it any different from when you're transitioning from one tool to a new tool though? So you have to have overlap to make that transition happen and build trust in the new tool before you cut over and cut the original loose. So it's kind of a similar pattern, right?
Yeah, that's what we've been struggling with. So as a consultancy as well, right? Like we've always had these deterministic tools that we use to identify vulnerabilities. And then we've got the creativity that comes in from a consultant to actually do like identification of business logic or like understand the context of an application or the code to identify vulnerabilities, to identify flaws. And now we're introducing AI into this mix. And it's like, okay, so from a budget perspective, as a small consultancy, like we don't have unlimited funds, and all of a sudden, like my software budget has gone from, you know, hey, it's a cost of a burp license, right, per consultant, to oh, it's the cost of a burp license plus all of these tokens that they're using, plus Claude, plus whatever else. Like my spend has just gone through the roof. And trying to figure out where that balance is and what's actually needed. So I can only imagine what's going on internally with the discussions that you're having on these are the tools that we buy and this is where we're going to move to. Where does that actually make sense? And what is the cutoff, right? Like when does the tooling and our scripting, when is that good enough for us to either, you know, reduce what we're putting into Burp or reduce what we're putting into, you know, dynamic static analyzers, as opposed to what we're putting into the AI, and how much are we trying to grow? And it's just again, this is what's keeping me up at night, because I don't know where we push, right? Is like, what does my business look like in not even 5 years? What does it look like in 6 months at this point? Because the landscape is just changing so quickly. And part of this is turning into a, you know, again, a therapy session, I guess, is what, you know, feels like.
I was
like
going to say,
times.
It sounds like you need some rest. Yeah. You keep saying you're staying up all night, man. You need to get some sleep. Unplug a little.
Can you, though? Right? I've got Telegram on my phone. And I'm telling my agents to do things.
You
got to
throw your phone in the freezer or something.
Throw it. Go sit on the beach and throw it in the ocean, Seth. Yeah, get a new one when you get home.
I like that. Yeah, we'll see how that goes. But so, I mean, so Kurt, your suggestion, though, is like just like, okay, we're doing the changeover, right? From one tool to the next. AI, it realistically is not, it's not really that different from the latest version of whatever, you know, DAS scanner or SAS scanner that you're using. Is that what you've been telling your teams? Is that approach working for you?
I mean, we're not really applying it yet. It's new, right? We're transforming the way we work by applying AI. And frankly, I don't trust AI to get it right. It's going to take me a long time to actually trust that these solutions are doing what I need them to do. Just like Larry said, I would never trust AI with a system configuration. Like, yeah, you might help me, but you bet I'm going to be checking on that. And it's going to take a long time to be sure that, hey, it got it right. And it got it right 100 times in a row. And it got it wrong one time. Okay, well, I trust it, but that one time still is going to keep you up at night. So we have to find that threshold and really define it, or what's your acceptable level of risk. This is going to change org to org. And so for you working with different orgs, it's going to be really hard to ever make that transition. I don't have a perfect answer because we're still going to be figuring out how to kind of rebuild our tool stack for the future. It's just something that'll be in progress for the foreseeable future.
Well, and with that, right, like I feel like we are, it's no longer developing tools. It feels like we are growing tools, right? Like, and so they're constantly evolving. Kind of it's the same thing with the course itself, right? It used to be like when we did our, you know, practical secure code review, like manual code review process, we developed it, went really well, and we were able to just like kind of rinse and repeat. Like, yeah, there were small updates here and there, but the approach was sound and it stayed the same. As soon as we've introduced AI into anything, it becomes this, okay, every time that we revisit this idea, it's changed. We're having to grow, you know, we're growing the tool set, we're growing the prompts, we're growing, right? Like, that's what it feels like to me, is more curation and growth than it does just like once, you know, rinse and repeat, which used to be the model. All right, guys, like we have been going for over an hour and it feels like we have just barely like scratched the surface here. This has been so much fun. But I do want to be cognizant of everyone's time and, you know, coming on. So we'll give everybody just like one, we'll go around the room one last minute, right? Like, you know, thoughts to try and put a bow on this as much as we can for today. And then we will call it. So I guess, Kurt, you know, any last minute thoughts before we, you know, close it out?
I'm just getting my day started and you guys are making me rack my brain. Like I can't, I think I just gave my final thought like three minutes ago at this point.
That's true.
I'll go then. I would question everybody who's listening, at least, to reconsider anything you feel anytime you're resistant to something or you have concerns or suddenly you have your strong feeling, to analyze that strong feeling and really understand where that's coming from. Because as security professionals, we need to fundamentally rethink everything we're doing. You know, the good conversation of deterministic versus non-deterministic, between AI to not use AI to, you know, determine what is, you know, my risk level and at-risk appetite, all these different things. When you're dealing with AI and where we're headed, stop for a moment and really get to the core of that feeling and understand why you're saying that. Because I feel, and again, I'm saying this, a lot of us have feelings and we're operating on feelings, not actual data and not facts. And yes, when you first use AI, if you use it like in the most basic way, you're probably going to get garbage, right? Garbage in, garbage out. Like I always tell people my prompts for when I'm like building like wikis or different things, they're like 18 pages long. Like my prompts are massive because I give it all the stuff so I can have it tuned in the right way. Play with AI with that expectation that you're building something and you have to give it a lot. If you're only going to give it, hey, build me a wiki on XYZ, it's probably going to be garbage. But going back to it, rethink everything and don't be so resistant. This is a time for us to change in a positive way. And I think you have to. If you don't get on board, I think you're going to get left behind. I think as an industry, as I've said before, AI is here. Even if it does not change today, no one's going back, right? AI is not going to just, even the bubble pops, token bubble pops, whatever is going to happen, we're going to, everything stays the same right now. It's still going to be used everywhere.
He's not kidding about 18 page prompts either. I've seen them.
There.
Pretty man, late. That's wild.
It's bananas. But I think to piggyback on that, if I have to give a parting thought, it's use AI practically. Don't use it just to use it, because that's how you end up in the garbage in, garbage out scenario. So use it intelligently. Make your life better with it. Don't use it just to check a box. Because if you listen to Coffee Chaos and Prodsec, you'll find out pretty quickly how I feel about checking boxes.
It loves them.
And listen to, yeah, listen. That's yeah, that's a good thing. Ken, any final thoughts before we, you know, close it out today?
Brain terrified like that. Yeah, Cameron's like, you're telling me that frontier models are going to define how we work together on software, redefining an SDLC to be an ADLC. They'll also own the tools that do the coding. They'll also own the tools that do the security. They'll do probably the QA and everything else. Great. Awesome. I guess the world doesn't need anything but frontier model companies. I don't know. That's terrifying. So one, I feel like we're about to get a worse version of Google, basically, like the Borg will say. Two, just one last note on determinism. I hear this. Let me just put it this way. 3 decades of determinism hasn't been working. Leave that where it stands for finding complex bones. So there is a mixture here of the two worlds. I like what Blake said. It's a good point. You know, there's good times to use AI. There's good times to use determinism. You can save some tokens if you blend it. But, you know, obviously business logic flaws, IDOR, complex issues, nuanced issues, determinism has failed us. So you got to go a different way. The last thing I'll say, the third thing is, thank you, Cameron. Thank you, Kurt, both for having us on your podcast and asking us and giving us the time to talk about these things. And then thank you for joining today and letting us pick your brain, especially early in the morning, earlier for Kurt, 1 hour earlier, I believe, than Cameron for Kurt. So thank you for that. And yeah, just really appreciative of your everything, your energy, your time, and you guys in general.
Yeah. Yeah. Really appreciate it. My final thought was just like, don't give up, right? Along those same lines of what you were saying, Kurt, like this is, it still is a superpower. It still is something that is useful and it can make your life and your job better if you use it in the right way. So learn how to do it. That's what I've been telling people. That's what we've been telling people for a while is, yes, there's gotchas and there are sharp edges and it's new technology. So those sharp edges can really burn you and you're gonna spend money when you hit those edges. But overall, it's going to improve your life and it's going to improve AppSec and ProdSec and security in general. So might as well get on board now and be part of the revolution or the evolution of the industry. Cool. All right. Well, thanks you all for joining. Thanks to everyone with the comments today. If you want to continue the conversation, jump into Slack. I know that Cameron and Kurt are heavy involved on LinkedIn and other places as well. So you can find us on Slack or LinkedIn. You can find Cameron and Kurt on LinkedIn. Other places you guys are at, is that the best place?
It's the best place for you.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Otherwise, listen to Coffee, Chaos, and ProdSec tomorrow when it comes out for the initial discussion that we had. This is the second one. But yeah, happy to have y'all. And we will catch everyone online.
Thank you.
Thanks.